This is the Living Fearless Today podcast, a show that helps men like you and me who are struggling to get unstuck and overcome fear to live confidently and courageously. I'm your host and transformation coach, Mike Forrester, helping you create the change you want now. Join me as I interview men who've conquered their challenges and soared to success as they spill their secrets on how they live fearless today. Well, hello and welcome back, my friend. Bob Wisher is joining me this week. Bob is the host of Men Becoming Better Men. And that's the name of his coaching program as well. And so Bob's got an amazing story where it's like, you know, things happen. You have choices. What do you decide to do from those choices? Do you decide to be passive, to just let them occur? Or like Bob, do you decide to step up and take action? And then what kind of action? So we're going to get into Bob's story and the decisions. And, you know, it's one of those that this kind of defines the path that we take and the results that we get, not just for ourselves individually, but for our relationships. And Bob is known as the relationship engineer. So, you know, he's definitely got some experience with the relationship component there. But then also understand it goes beyond that. Those decisions that we make, the consequences, whether they're good or bad, come into our career, our friendships, again, go into the relationships, but how we are in life, like how we're perceived, how we show up, and just has kind of like a throwing that boulder. Well, maybe not a boulder. I don't know. Maybe you're working out in the gym way more than I am. Maybe it's just a big stone that's into the lake, you know, and the ripples that go out from it. So those are our decisions and the way things show up. So, Bob, how are you doing today, my friend?
Doing great. It's actually a cinder block.
There you go. We'll call the cinder block a boulder.
And I'll explain that in a minute because I got a funny story that we didn't talk about in pre-show.
Well, go ahead right now so that we make sure we include it here.
So what I try to do is when I'm prepping for to be on somebody's show, I like to listen to an episode, a past episode of theirs. And I just happened to pick your one from a couple weeks ago with Eli Libby. Yeah. And he started off with talking about F3. Yeah. I also do F3. So part of what we use, at least we do, and instead of having weights for F3, because we basically go out in the high school parking lot and do a boot camp kind of workout. We do it here once a week. I think he mentioned they do it twice a week out there. We do it once a week here, and we cinder block is our weight. We'll do, you know, overhead presses, we'll do benches, we'll do, you know, we call them lawnmower, where you just like a curl. Yeah. But anyway, it's a cool thing. It's funny, and I connected with him on LinkedIn. So we've been awesome. Messaging back and forth actually all afternoon to check it. You know, what do you think about F3 and all this stuff? So you didn't even know it, but you made a connection between two other people today just because I was on your podcast.
Well, Eli and Kyle are amazing men, and so you being able to connect. Like if you hadn't, I would in just a heartbeat put the two of you together. So I'm glad you guys are connecting and,
yeah,
you know, the whole aspect of F3 with the cinder block. So that is amazing. So from now on, when I go to like Lowe's or Home Depot, I'm just going to see the cinder blocks and think that those are boulders and, yep, there you know,
just a weight. It's an F3 weight.
There we go. Oh man. What does life look like professionally for you at this time?
Oh, actually, there's a ton, actually. Well, and F3, not part of professional part of that, but one of the things I do, I also, I lead what's called a journey group. It's a discipleship program that I've been part of. I host a men's hike every other week. It's called Forged on the Trail. I'm also developing a new online, call it the Men Becoming Better Men Circle. So that'll be launching hopefully very soon. Then I also do one-on-one coaching And I do that, all of that on top of a full-time corporate job and a real estate side hustle that I've been working on. So I'm doing all kinds of stuff professionally and on what you call this, the stuff I don't get paid for that I do, but it's all in the realm.
We'll say that's the personal, which that's the next question I usually ask is like, what is a personal side of life look like for you?
Yeah, it's all of it, just busy and trying to find different ways to connect with men. Like we kind of talked about earlier, when men have a lot of stuff going on, we're very disconnected. We have a lot of things we're dealing with, stress, relationships, marriages, careers, all that stuff, and it just it seems to get so overwhelming for some men that they just that's all they can afford the time to do is go to work, come home, do the family stuff, rinse, repeat every day. And what I found through my first marriage was that doing that on a daily basis disconnected me so badly from other men that once I did get to that point of where I got divorced about 11 years ago now, I had no marriage. My kids were graduating high school and going off to college, and didn't have a lot of friends because all the friends that we had from the course of the marriage were kind of she got them in the divorce. So there I am with a job and not much else. And really, because, and I know this is the way I look at it, not that my purpose of raising my children is done, because obviously that never happens, but for the most part, they're 18, they're going off to college, they're spending a lot of time building their lives, building their friendships, taking, you know, the classes and stuff. I didn't have a lot to do, and I didn't have what I would have deemed as a purpose at the time. It was go to work, come home, go to work, come home, go to work, come home, and that was it. And it got very frustrating very quickly. And what I learned in the time since then is I was in a danger zone. I've actually known four men that have taken their lives, probably likely because they got to that danger zone of, oh my God, is this all there is? Yeah, or what, you know, what's my value? What's my worth in life? And it's just so grateful that I found what I did find and got on a path of personal growth and development that has led me to where I am today. I'm so grateful.
Yeah, definitely grateful for it, because the statistics, man, are not at all encouraging. Mm-hmm. You know, we don't talk about the stuff, so we're isolated. We have a cycle, you know, in our head that plays almost like, you know, like a broken record. And, you know, being detached, like you've talked about, it's just like a combination, you know, like a stack of things that don't play to our benefit. And we can look at the statistics and see how much higher that men are, you know, on the suicide rates than women are. And it's astronomical. I want to say, like, back in 2019, you know, before we went through everything of just having the world upended, that it was four times higher for the men than it was for the women.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's things that we can do along the way. We just have to realize that it's like they're available there. Mm-hmm. On that note, Bob, as you look back at what went on, you know, during your first marriage, and what you're now doing in your second marriage to stay connected, when you're talking to men, what are you coaching them on doing? Because when we say yes to something, we're saying no to something else. So what do you say yes to stay connected with other men without you know, saying no to your marriage, your relationship with your kids.
Yeah, it's all her. Actually, she endorses it. She supports it. And that's been the complete difference in my two marriages. Is my first wife, I loved playing softball. I loved playing hockey back in the day when I was younger, and I got to actually do those things physically. And she would give me nothing but grief. You know, why are you going to do this? Why, you know, why do you got to go out for a beer after all of those things? And it kind of sucked me away from, you know, or guilted me away from that male bonding stuff that was what buoyed me through a lot of those years. And now my wife, she supports it. Hey, going for a hike with the guys. Okay. Have a great time. See you when you get back. That's the attitude. Cause she knows, because I've laid the groundwork that, you know, whether it's my workouts, my hiking, you know, the groups I've led and lead, she knows that all fills me to where when I get home, I'm not grumpy. I'm not passive. I'm not, you know, I'm out leading and filling my cup. And then it gives me the ability to lead and do what I need to do when I get home that fills her cup. You know, speaking her love languages. You know, the one big answer that I usually give guys as far as that marriage thing is date nights. That's my number one lesson learned from past marriage to this marriage is a regular scheduled non-negotiable date night has got to be in the game plan, because you've got to stay connected. And I've heard every excuse from guys, oh, well, we got kids and they're too young and we don't have anybody to watch them, and or we don't have the money, or we don't have all the excuses you could come up with about why you're not taking your wife on a date night. Like we talked about earlier, it's going to cost you later. Hey, spend the money now to take her out on date night, or it's going to cost you a heck of a lot more later.
Yeah. And I don't think we fully understand or admit to what the cost is going to be, right? If I don't invest in myself, and then also, you know, create a space for my wife to go do the same thing with her friends, because her relationships are just as important as ours are as with, you know, with other men. If I'm not doing all that stuff to cultivate a healthy relationship, you know, that healthy marriage, and having myself healthy, it's gonna cost dearly. When you look back at, you know, your first marriage and kind of pre-divorce and post-divorce, what are some of the costs that, you know, that entailed, that it included, that it's like, we know there's the financial aspect, but that's not all there is.
No, it took me several years to recover from that. And being honest, I'm actually in the minority as far as, because I left the marriage. I walked away. I've heard roughly 75-25, where the women are the ones that are leaving the marriage. So I was in the minority on that side, but again, it still took a lot of time to recover from that mentally, spiritually, physically. Actually, I was very overweight at the time. That was part of, you know, of course, the first thing you do when you get divorced, you gotta lose the weight, you gotta get in shape, you gotta be attractive for the next one. Spiritually, I didn't have a relationship with Jesus at the time, so that was, you know, not even in the picture at the time. And then mentally, of course, you know, battling depression. Actually, I was medicated. I was taking antidepressants for at least 2 years before the marriage ended, just to cope with all of the things that were going on. And then to get, you know, to get off of that, get my head straight, get some guidance and get some clarity around, you know, who I was and who I was being and what I was becoming and all that. The cost was huge on top of, you know, lawyer fees and, you know, splitting 401ks and all that other stuff that goes with it. The cost is excessive. And it's not necessary really if you do the right things during. and you're being the right type of person. And a lot of that, unfortunately for guys, is stuff that we don't even see. It's stuff that happened. I'm reading a book now called Men's Work by Connor Beaton. So good. But just all of the things that happen to us growing up, you know, whether they're small, you know, single time occurrence traumas or bigger traumas like abuse or neglect or stuff like that. Just so many things that we don't even I didn't learn until I was into my late 40s and early 50s of all the things that happen and why they happen and what they caused in my subconscious mind from when I was even pre-birth. That's what one of the stories that I uncovered was, and one of the traumas that impacted me was before I was even born, because I was conceived prior to my parents getting married. They lived in a small town. You know, rumors get around, and it was late 60s. It's not like, you know, today everybody'd be like, oh, child out of wedlock, no big deal. Back in the late 60s, it was a significant deal. And I have come to learn that the stress and the things that they were going through at that time were probably causing a lot of chaos inside of them individually and each other. You know, where are we going to live? Where are we going to get a job and work? And how are we going to afford things? Da, 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 da. All of that, which I didn't know until a few years ago when I started studying this stuff. All of those feelings are absorbed into me as in utero through my mom, and the stress and the strain and all the things that she was experiencing. And they actually, my infant brain made meaning of those things to say, I'm either unwanted or the world is scary or any number of things that my mind could have made up at that point. And when I fast forward all those fears and all those things through my entire life, it's like, oh, I can see why this, you know, why this happened in seventh grade and why this happened in 10th grade and why this happened in my marriage and why I had, you know, why I ended up filing for divorce and all these things. They're just like, oh, wow, everything makes sense now because of all this thing that happened to me way back before I even knew what, you know, before I took my first breath. It's insane. It's insane. We don't know those things. To be able to figure them out and find those out is extremely empowering.
There's a number of men that I've coached, and I know for myself as well, like my parents actually verbalized it. You know, you weren't planned, you weren't a mistake. Yeah. You know, we weren't really looking to have you. It's like, thanks. I feel so elevated, loved, and included.
And, you know, those things, they instantly, we make a meaning of those, whether you're 2 years old or 10 years old, whatever. And yeah. you go through your life living that story that, of course, is not true. And it can mess up almost every area of your life.
When you've got somebody, you know, you've got a man that's sitting there and saying, hey, Bob, I'm not plugged in. Or the people that I'm plugged in with aren't healthy, right? You can tell that they're not the people that are going to help you to grow and become who you really want to be. They're just convenient. They're there. How do you help men to figure out how to reach out in a healthy way, and then how to be, you know, kind of nurturing and growing those relationships to have that circle around you that it's like, hey, I'm going through this really challenging thing. I need some support. I need some encouragement. Or when you're like, dude, I just landed this promotion, to be able to celebrate with you. How do you go about finding those men?
Actually, that's one of the bigger challenges, honestly. There's multiple ways, but just getting out and kind of putting your ego aside, putting your fears aside. So for the last, well, I've handed it off now, but 6 years ago, I created a group, the original group of men becoming better men. It was an in-person meeting, and we created it on the Meetup app, and that's where the majority of the guys came from for most of the time that I was running it. So for me, it was putting it out there and giving a space. And that's, you know, I guess to answer your question, it's, you got to go find it. If you realize that you're in that place where, you know, you're either isolated or you're hanging out with the wrong people, you got to go find the right people. Looking into a group like that, I know there's not a lot of, there aren't a lot of local ones, but I do hear every once in a while of, you know, guys that have been in different groups around the country. There's a lot of virtual options. Sometimes that works. Sometimes, at least again, for me, it doesn't, it works when you're the guy facilitating the other guys getting together, but as a participant, I've been participant in some virtual groups that it just, I'm more of the type of person that I like to be physically connected and be able to, you know, look you in the eye and stuff. But yeah, just, you got to seek it out, and there's no magic. I unfortunately haven't found the magic way yet to just snap your fingers and have three guys show up at your front door and say, hey, let's hang out and talk about important stuff. If I do that, I could probably make a lot of money, because that's what I think a lot of guys need. But yeah, it's having the courage and having the fortitude to just say, I'm going to do this. And over the years, we have had guys show up in our circle that you could just tell they're at wit's end. You know, guys who have lost their fathers early in life and didn't have that masculine influence, or guys that have been through abuse, guys that are battling addiction, just every different type. And it's just, again, it depends on the person and what you need, but you've got to seek it out. Find it one way or another. But it's definitely something absolutely imperative. I call it non-negotiable in my life. I've got to be connected, whether it's, I guess that's another one we kind of talked about at the beginning, is F3, is a great way to get to meet guys. They have them all over the country. Look at F3Nation.com. They even have a little map on there. You can click on the map. You can find the closest one to you. And for those that don't know what F3 is, it's a workout. It's a workout for men. They do them multiple times a week in every area of the country. And that's one way. I'm here in a suburb of Detroit, and we have 6 or 7 different, cities around that, the area here that host a group. And doing stuff like that, just getting out of your comfort zone and being able to show up at one of those things. It takes some guts. But once you do it and you get acclimated to it and you start building some friendships and, you know, you go for coffee after with the guys or whatever, you got to get connected, bottom line.
Yeah. I think it's one of those of being patient. It's almost like trying to, find a girlfriend. It takes time. You don't just walk up and go, hey, you want to get married? let's go. It's like some time, some investment. And one thing I know that I didn't expect, Bob, was when I was looking for those relationships and learning that process, is sometimes I needed to be the one to initiate and be vulnerable and say, like, hey, I'm struggling. Because there's almost like this fear of, well, what if Bob doesn't struggle? What if Bob, diminishes what I'm feeling and what I'm going through? Hey, I'm struggling with this. Almost like, hey, Bob, I'm struggling with finances. And you look at me like, Mike, what kind of an idiot are you that you're struggling with finances? That's super easy. People, just downplaying what you go through. And it's like, I didn't understand that sometimes I was going to be the one to put my neck out there.
Yeah.
And just because, you know, if I did that with you and you didn't respond properly, doesn't mean that every other guy is. So I need to take it on a count by count basis and be willing to put myself out there. Is that kind of what you've seen as well?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. How's that quote go? It's actually a Dr. Glover quote that he uses. It's something get out there, be out there. Test for interest is a part of it. It's like, so like if we were to meet at a coffee shop, hey, how you doing? You know, just some kind of one opening liner. And if you engage with me, great. That's like, you know, that opens it, or it says you want to be friendly with me and you want to have a conversation. So continue that conversation. And it's a walking through open doors. So when you open the door, walk through, you know, continue to walk through it and engage with it. Cause, you know, a lot of times, and I experience this all the time, I'll go to the gym, guys got their headphones in, and that's just one. That's the biggest indication of me. Like, I just want to be in my world. Just leave me in my isolation. I'm happy, and it's frustrating sometimes because it's one of the few places you really do anymore interact with people or can, and it's weird when you try to talk to somebody when they got headphones.
I will encourage you on this one, Bob. When you're going to the gym and you see somebody, like, I put the headphones on to stay focused on like what I'm doing. And yeah. Sometimes I really don't care for the music that the gym is playing. But if I see you working out near me and you're aware of your surroundings, I'll nod at you. Because if I go, hey, Bob, how's it going? You have your headphones on. You're not going to hear me.
Yeah.
But if I do something body language wise,
yeah. Good point.
And you're open to it, you'll engage, right? There's that possibility. Not everybody's going to. It's okay.
It's okay. Yeah. Some people want it. Some people don't.
Yeah, exactly.
And don't take it personally when they don't.
Yes. That was a struggle. Oh my gosh. I would have looked at, hey, Bob didn't respond. Oh, I must be something about me, rather than just, hey, this may, right. Exactly. Right. You know, it's like, I took a shower before I came in. I promise I smell okay. You know, but it's one of those, I don't know what's going on in your life. I don't know how you prefer to work out. You know, there's going to be other opportunities. So just keep taking them one at a time and, don't take it personal. Yeah. That was a big downfall for me. So I fully get that and agree. Well, as far as like in, you know, now you're like the relationship engineer, right? How can we as men, you know, invest into our marriages, like, you know, into that relationship? How can we invest in it in a healthy way that doesn't draw or take away, diminish from who we are or what we have in a negative way? You know what I mean? Like, you're setting yourself up for, you know, being drained or, you know, not just having that healthy connection. How can I do stuff in a healthy way, Bob?
Yeah, well, one of my best suggestions for that is love languages. Again, something I did not know when I was married the first time, because if I had, I think things would have gone a lot differently. But what I've learned with my second marriage is, you know, what hers are and what mine are, and how those play to each other. So my wife is very much words of affirmation. All I got to do is say, good morning, beautiful. And she lights right up and has a wonderful day. For her, she knows that I'm physical touch. So if she gives me a little back rub, you know, at night before I go to bed, she knows that makes me happy and I'm good to go. So just being able to know what those things are about each other and working into them. Probably the flip side of that is the example of my first marriage. Again, me being physical touch, my ex-wife was very anti-touch. She didn't like to be touched. She didn't like to touch. So here I'm trying to physically be with her physically because I want the touch constantly. And she's like, why are you touching me all the time? And not understanding that's my love language. It's how I get what I need. And here I'm trying to do that to her, and she's being repulsed by it because she doesn't want that at all. So when you're disconnected, that's what happens.
Yeah, it's one that understanding what your love language is and what your wife's love language is very important, because it's like, it's almost like this sliding scale, right? You're thinking, hey, I'm depositing a dollar every time I touch my wife. I am putting myself out there. And she's looking at, hey, you're withdrawing 50 cents. Your bank account's going down, not up.
And then we wonder why we don't get, you know, the intimacy part of it, because, you know, my accounts go down. I think I'm doing here and she's down here, and we're definitely on the same pitch.
Yeah. Communication, so different in what we're perceiving and what they're actually receiving. I mean, it's so vital. And that's where it's like, you know, understanding who you are, who your partner is. Man, there's a value there. Have you found in your current marriage that in understanding who you are has laid a different foundation in your marriage? Because it's like, I've seen men, and I tried this as well, Bob, where I was like, I'm going to have an outstanding marriage. I'm going to invest in my marriage. And yet I was still in that unhealthy place. It changed things for a while, but it didn't create a consistent, you know, supportive, healthy marriage. Is that something that, you know, you've experienced differently in your current marriage? Is you knowing who you are has changed the game in your marriage?
Yeah, absolutely. Actually, that's kind of the perfect story for this situation. So I've been with my now wife. We've only been married for going on almost 7 years. But we've been together for 10 or so. But that first couple of years, again, I was healing from the first marriage. I was still on the self-discovery, you know, had just started my, you know, working with a coach and getting my own act together, trying to figure out what was going on. And then it wasn't even until, probably a year or so after that I actually went through, some deeper coaching, where I found that the item I talked about earlier with the situation with my birth story, and then that really opened up a lot of doors for me to be able to understand again who I was being, who I was becoming, how I was showing up in the marriage, and all that stuff. A lot of learning and growth and from listening to podcasts and reading books on relationships and all that stuff that I did through that period of time, and understanding, you know, what my wife needs, what I need, and how to make those two things mesh together. It was absolutely a huge part of our story, and figuring out what I missed at one point. A couple of years into our relationship, we actually broke up for a while because I was in a place where I was struggling with a relationship with my son. He actually decided he didn't want to come. It was his senior year of high school. He didn't want to come and have his, we had every other weekend parenting time, with him, and he didn't want to come stay with us anymore when it was supposed to be my time to be with him. And I didn't want to spend it. I had already missed out on a lot of things, and I didn't want to spend his whole senior year of not having, you know, that time with him. So we actually broke it off for a while. We didn't see each other for 6 months. And through that period of time, is when I really was, because I had I didn't have a relationship, so I was totally focusing on myself and my personal development, my personal growth. It took about 6 months for me to realize that what I was doing wrong and how I was being and how I was acting and all that. And I almost, fortunately, I didn't lose her, but I almost did because I let her go. But came to my senses, and we started dating again, and kind of lived separately for about 6 months until my son graduated. And once he graduated, and then he was off to college, we moved back in together. And then a year or so after that, ended up going through and getting hitched again. So, but yeah, it was a big part of the story, big part of, the healing and the discovery that I had to do to get where I was supposed to be.
Yeah. Now that self-awareness and self-discovery is something that I don't think we really understand how to get there or what it does for us. And, I know for myself and other men that I've talked with, it's like, Bob, I don't know what my purpose is. Like, what does that look like? And do I have a purpose? Or, like the messages that we talked about, being a mistake or unplanned fit in to that then. And it's almost like, Bob, do I even have a purpose? Like, okay, I don't feel like a man, but now do I not even have a purpose? Like, how low do I go on this chart? As you were going through, post-divorce and reclaiming, discovering your awareness and reclaiming who you are, did you discover your purpose, or was that something you already knew and just weren't working in it? Like, what did that look like for you?
No, actually, that was a benefit of my first coaching program I went through. Part of it, very early on, there was an exercise that I did that went through this whole long list of questions and things like, what are your values? And it went as far as, what did you want to be when you grew up? Things like that. There's a whole bunch of questions in there. None of them are coming to me off the top of my head, but the gist of it was you answer all these questions, and at certain points, it's like, do you see trends or threads in the answers that you've given to this point? And one of them was like, what are your three favorite movies? And one of my favorite movies is Top Gun. So yeah, that and a couple of the other answers, like when I grew up, when I was growing up, I wanted to be a fireman. So again, somebody that helps people, somebody that is a, has a somewhat of a hero complex, Top Gun, hero complex, type of thing. And where that, those threads in those type of things led me to believe that it was my purpose was that I wanted to help other people, discover, what's in it for themselves. And I ended up, long story short, that whole exercise that I went through, my purpose statement ended up being to express and inspire love and wellness within myself and to others. And that's basically been the rock that I've been standing on for the past almost 10 years to guide me and send me in the right direction of what it is I want to do. I can't stand to see, I mentioned, knowing four men that have committed suicide before. I can't stand hearing about another one. Every one of them tears me up. One of the more recent ones was a man that attended our church, and my wife and I were teaching I'll call it a Sunday school course, just so people get the gist of what I'm talking about. But we were teaching this course, and a part of it was to do Enneagram personality profile. And this particular man, he was a number seven, which is somebody that's very boisterous and somebody that's kind of out there and wants to be seen and very charismatic and out there. And since his passing, every time my wife and I taught that course, and we were going through that section where we would talk about because we would go through with the rest of the class, and we talked through all the numbers of the Enneagram. And every time that number seven hit the screen, I just had to stop and pause. And it happened two or three times. It is still, it's when I think of him and just the fact that he felt so lost and so disconnected. And we hadn't been working together professionally, but we had been talking. And so I kind of knew what his situation was. But I can't stand to hear another one. And it tears me up every time I hear that, you know, this man or that man has, because it's a temporary solution it's a permanent solution to a temporary problem.
Yeah.
And there's no problem that I feel can't be solved by sitting down with somebody that cares and just having a deep conversation.
Yeah. That's where the community is, like having a circle of men that can support you, come alongside you, validate, and maybe, like, you know, I don't know about you, Bob, I have blind spots. There are things I'm clueless on, but having men who can see it, you know, it's like there's that whole story about trying to read the label from the inside of the jar. You know, it's like, yeah, that I've got those blind spots. I'm not aware. I'm just not seeing it. And other people are just like, you know, other men are like, dude, I'm seeing it. That's the neon lights.
Yeah.
Clueless. Absolutely clueless. But that's like the benefit of the relationships. And, you know, like having that purpose that you've talked about, knowing that purpose can help us to not feel so lost and isolated and detached and just like drifting.
Yeah, right. It gives you that zest for life is what it really does.
Yes.
I mean, I spend a good part of every day just brainstorming, you know, how can I be better at what I'm doing? How can I help men see that, you know, yes, okay, you're going through a depression or you're having struggles with your wife or your job's going sideways, whatever it is, or if you're a business owner and you can't seem to figure out, you know, how do I align my ethics with my business and make money and all that stuff at the same time? There's all those things that are spinning around our heads. We try to take them all on ourselves. And it can work. I'm not saying it can't work, but to be able to sit with somebody and collaborate with them and talk to them and like you said, get other opinions and other viewpoints and have somebody help see your blind spots. It's so invaluable.
Yeah. Well, Bob, dude, I want to thank you for coming and sharing like the encouragement, the reality, you know, how impactful things can be when we don't take action, when we don't step into a community, you know, going a lone wolf is sometimes easier, but you know, if that was the way things were supposed to be, you wouldn't see a pack of wolves, right?
Exactly.
There is a strength in being able to rely on somebody else. And, you know, like you said as well, having your purpose, that clarity, being able to invest in your relationships in a stronger, more impactful and powerful way when we're in a healthy place. So, you know, save our energy instead of trying to build up something when we're on quicksand. Make sure we're on rock, you know, and then work, you know, build ourselves, then build stuff. So, Bob, I want to thank you very much for everything you've shared today. How can guys outside of the podcast reach out and connect with you?
Yeah, probably the primary two ways. My website, www.menbecomingbettermen.com. You can contact me through there. And then Instagram is probably the next easiest place. Just search at The Relationship Engineer.
Very cool. Bob, thank you again, my friend.
Yeah, thank you for having me. Great conversation.
My pleasure.
Thanks so much, my friend, for joining me on another episode. If you found the information within the show helpful, please leave a review on the platform you're listening to. It helps raise the show's visibility so other men can join us in breaking free. See you on the next episode, and remember to continue putting yourself out there. Have a great one.